Welcome to the Punk Rock MBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock MBA Podcast. Today's guest is Diego, a.k.a. Lil Xan. You may know him for his super popular song back in 2018 or whatever, Betrayed. You may also know him as that emo rapper kid with all the face tattoos. One of the first cohort of all those people who kind of broke out. But as you will find out from this interview, he has grown up a lot since then. And he's actually a really smart guy. Very sharp. There's a lot more going on there than I think a lot of people may realize. Since then, he's gotten sober. He's gone independent. He was on a major label before, I think Atlantic or something. He's now taken all that under his own control, started a Patreon. Like, you know, he's really reinventing himself as a human and as an artist. And that's kind of really what this show is all about. It's about talking to people who have found a way to make a living on their own terms, doing whatever it is that makes them happy in the way that they want to do it. And I think he's a case study in that. And you guys know I also talk a lot about mental health and addiction on this show, and he's got a lot of smart things to say about that. So this is a really good one. Really, really enjoyed this one. And I also happen to think his new music is super good. I also want to thank our mutual friend Michael Montoya for introducing us and making this happen. Need to do a show with Michael soon, too, because he's got a great story, too. You may know him from his old deathcore band Goliath or being in Winds of Plague now, but he's also a very accomplished producer who's worked with people like Xan, Juice WRLD, Bones, Scarlord, like pretty much all the cool kind of edgier rappers these days. He's got a great story, too, so thank you to Michael for connecting us. Before I get into this show, there's a couple things that you can do to support the show if you are so inclined. Number one, share it on social media. That really helps us a lot. Number two, you can sign up for the Punk Rock MBA email list. I send out an email every week with links to any of the content that I put out. No ads or spam or anything like that. There's a link to that in the show notes. And number three, if you really, really like us, you can choose to support us on Patreon if you are so inclined. It is because of the patrons that were able to do this show, so I'm very grateful for your support. You can check that out at the link in the description as well. But first, before we get into that, let's do a little bit of Q&A. From BBS Bartel, if you didn't pursue the career path you chose, what else would you be doing with your life? I've thought about this one quite a lot, and, you know, who knows? At this point in my life, you know, I am who I am. But I think if I had it to do all over again, knowing what I know about myself, I probably would have gotten, like, a master's in computer science, I think. Because I've realized that that's how my brain works. You know, when I was younger, I always thought I wanted to be an artist of some kind. But as I got older and I worked with, you know, different kinds of people, like as I've talked about before, when I was in my, you know, mid-20s, I worked for a product design firm. We did like industrial design and engineering for a bunch of people, but in particular, Procter & Gamble, like Febreze and Swiffer and, you know, all that stuff that I worked on. And I got to work with a lot of engineers at that job. We had mechanical and electrical engineers. So, for example, like for the Swiffer that's on the market now, I'm pretty sure is still the one that we designed. And so you got to figure out stuff like, you know, you can draw it and, you know, and sort of communicate what you would like it to look like. But an engineer has to actually design the parts that go into this thing and figure out how they fit together and how the molds are going to be designed that's going to make these things. And there's a chemical engineer, you know, mechanical engineer would do that stuff, like detailed part design and make sure that they're strong enough that it doesn't crack when you push on it, that sort of thing. And then there's a chemical engineer that has to figure out, you know, the I don't know what you call it, the juice, you know, that's on the Swiffer wet mop. You know, that there's a chemical engineer that has to formulate that and figure out, you know, if it's safe and does it do what we want it to do? And if not, how do we adjust it? And there's an industrial engineer that has to optimize the factory because, you know, Swiffer sells hundreds of millions of these units a year. And in order to meet that demand, you got to make sure that your factory is as efficient as possible. And how can you find cost savings, stuff like that. And going into it, I thought that I was going to get along best with the designers because when I was a kid, you know, I always told myself I want to be an artist, a creative person. But what I found is that I got along best with the engineers. Like, that's just how my brain works. I click with engineers, you know, accountants, finance people, stuff like that, that are like very rational, you know, logical, methodical kind of people. And I kind of don't really click with a lot of creative types. And I'm not putting them down. I've just realized that my brain doesn't really work that way. I have like an engineer brain. You know, I do things that are quote unquote creative, like making videos and stuff like that. But that's not how my brain works. And so I realized that I kind of butted heads with people who have more of a creative brain. And, you know, I've worked with computers and technology and stuff since I was a kid. You know, I was on the internet in 1994, like when this was shortly after the first web browser came out. That's how long ago it was. Like Windows didn't even have a TCP/IP stack back then. You had to download this thing called Trumpet Winsock to like dial into your, you know, internet connection and stuff. But you know, that's how my brain works. And the problems that I'm interested in solving now are ones that, you know, technologists solve now, primarily that computer scientists. I like solving problems at scale. I like making products and putting them out into the market and iterating on those things. And, you know, that's kind of the core of what software engineers do. That's where the action is. Those are where like the most interesting problems are being solved. And I think that's probably what I would do if I had to do it all over again. You know, finance is another place that could be interesting to me, but finance is to me less of kind of an intellectual exercise than it is just sort of a challenge of like, you know, how do you move money from this pile to the other one in the way that creates the most value for you, which is cool. I mean, that's interesting too, but you know, I really like that kind of like academic challenge that goes into like engineering, and that's probably what I would do. You know, I could change course. I could decide that I wanted to, and I can write some code, you know, I'm capable of doing that, but there's a big difference between being able to write some code and being an actual engineer. These are two very different things. You know, so if you go to like a coding boot camp or something like that, you'll come out of it being able to write some code, but that doesn't mean you're an engineer. I would want to be an actual software engineer, not just a kind of half-assed code monkey, which is what I what I am now. You know, if you put a gun to my head and ask me to build an app, I could do it, but I would do it in a way that's very janky and shitty and would make any real engineer shake their head at all the like really stupid design decisions and stuff that I made. And that's just not how I like to roll. I like to do things the right way. And so that's probably what I'd do. You know, go get a master's in computer science or something and start a technology company of some kind, I think. But, you know, I'm happy with where I'm at. I guess that the takeaway from all this to me is to, you know, understand how your brain works and what is a natural fit for you, which may not be what you think is a fit. You know, you may think that you were put on this earth to be a guitarist, but it turns out that maybe you were put on this earth to be, you know, a chemical engineer or an accountant. And that's not a bad thing. You know, you don't get to choose who you are. You don't get to choose what your strengths are. I think that they find you as much as you find them. And the more you sort of learn to understand those and lean into them, I think the happier you'll be, even if they aren't what they thought they would be. So I hope that helps, and thanks for the question. We are doing a little co-promotional swap with my good friend Ray Harkin's show, 100 Words or Less. So the object of this ad read is for you to go listen to his podcast, which I sincerely think is great. I've known him for a very long time. I've been on the show, and essentially it is an interview show where he sits down with people from independent culture, records the results of these conversations, and puts them out for you. Some of the people who have been on the show include Will Putney from Fit for an Autopsy and producer extraordinaire, Toby from Emory, Chadwick Johnson of 100th, Joe Taylor from Knuckle Puck, and many, many more. You get the idea. If you are into the bands that I talk about on my channel, then you're going to love the kind of stuff that Ray talks about. He is one of those genuinely nice, pleasant people that I have ever known. I really can't say enough good things about Ray. And he's been doing podcasts longer than pretty much anybody I know. So he's put a lot of time into this, and it's a good show. I think you should listen to it, which you can do at the link in the show notes. Or you can go to the podcast platform of your choice and search for 100 Words or Less, the podcast, with your host and my good friend, Ray Harkins. So check out the show, and hopefully you will like it as much as I do. And with that out of the way, let's get into the show. Diego, welcome to the podcast. I'm going to call you Diego because I always feel weird calling people by their like...
by their artist names, yeah.
Yeah, they're like rap or graffiti names. Like when I used to do graffiti, you know, my friends would be like, hey, this my boy Lost. And I'd be like, oh, you mean Bob.
Yeah, bro. I introduce myself as Diego to anybody, really, because I also feel very like weird or corny, like, to introduce myself as Dan. It's like,
I wonder what DaBaby does. He's like, hey, what's up? I'm DaBaby. He probably doesn't introduce himself. He probably expects you to know who he is.
I bet you the baby is just like, yo, I'm DaBaby. Like, I would, if I was DaBaby, I'd introduce myself as DaBaby.
I would too. Well, thanks for making time for this, and shout out to Michael for connecting us.
Yeah. Shout out to Mikey.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with the show, but I would guess that a lot of people listening to this are probably like older rock fans who maybe really only know Betrayed, and they probably think you're the same,
yeah,
you know, as 2018 or whatever, yeah. You know, the kid with the face tattoos that thinks it's cool to take drugs and stuff. But it seems like you've grown up a lot, especially in the last year or so. Where are you at now mentally and with your career and stuff?
Well, yeah, like you said, it was definitely like a rough, like honestly a rough last 3 years, to be honest. I was addicted to so much stuff like Xanax and opioids for the majority of my career. But yeah, I'm off all that stuff now. I just recently, last couple months, got completely sober. And that changed everything, bro. I feel like I missed out on all the, like, I feel like I went on tours and stuff, but I feel like I missed out. Like, I should have been sober to enjoy it more, you know, if that makes sense. Like, because I'm now starting, my serotonin levels are like coming back slowly but surely. And it just feels really good. Like, it feels really good. I wish I would have been sober for a lot of the cool shit I did, before the pandemic and just in life in general. But we're at a good spot right now, mentally too. We're at a good spot. So, you know, 2021, just got to hope that it's a good year, you know?
I just watched the video for my girlfriend this morning to do research for this. And, like, your energy in that, like, seems like a different person. Like, you seem so much more alert and like present.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, definitely more alert. People can tell, like if I was to like relapse on drugs, like my friends would know, like within a day they'd be like, oh, he's back on something. But yeah, it's like some one step at a time kind of stuff, you know. We're just taking it easy. We all make mistakes. I just want to let people know, like, they're not alone when they're going through, you know, stuff like that. And if they ever need someone to talk to, I'm there. You can DM me.
Well, I think the fact that you've been so kind of transparent about that stuff, you know, I'm sure it's been hard for you, but I think that's probably helped a lot of people.
Even if it just helped one person, if I could just not help one person, that would mean so much to me. But you're probably right. It probably has helped a bunch of people. And that's like probably one of the better feelings of this, is just knowing that, you know, if you subconsciously you're helping people, even if you do know or not know. But yeah, I get messages from fans all the time saying, like, I'd save their lives and stuff. I'm like, that makes me almost cry, like, every time. Crazy.
I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, when anybody becomes known for like, partying or drugs or whatever, on the one hand, you know, I'm sure that you feel like, well, shit, I feel like, you know, I've set a bad example, or maybe I got someone to think that something wasn't cool. But on the other hand, that's the reason why you connected with a lot of people who needed help. You know what I mean? Like, they're listening to you because they can tell that you're going through the same shit that they are.
Yeah, definitely speaks for itself in the music, too, with Betrayed, like, I think what captivated people with Betrayed was the hook, the Zans Don't Make You. And I knew it was a cool song when I wrote that, but I didn't realize, you know, how big of the impact of that, just that hook would be, you know, because, it's insane, bro. People really, I don't know, it's crazy.
It's even kind of hard for me to understand how big that song was, because, you know, I know of you through Michael and other people and stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, I think of you as like someone kind of just like, you know, in our kind of circle, but that song was fucking huge.
Yeah. I think it has like on shout out Cole Bennett. He did the video. I think on his channel it has like about 300 million. On a random channel it has like 50 million. And on my channel it has like another 100 million. I don't even understand. I wrote that song sitting on top of a washer machine, and like, yeah, and I probably wrote it in like 15 minutes, and I was like, oh, let's go. That's when we were just cranking out songs, you know, Mikey, my homie John, we were just trying to make the hit, you know, like just cranking out songs, 15 minute songs, and Betrayed came out of them, like those sessions. It's crazy.
You were 17, 18 then, like super young, right?
I think I was maybe late 17, turning eight. No, I was 18. Yeah, definitely 18. Yeah, 24 now.
I can't imagine what a ride it would be, it's like, it's almost cruel that we make people that young famous, because there's fucking no way that anybody that age is prepared for it.
No, not at all. Honestly, I've said the same thing. Like, when you give money and fame to such a young, like, person, like, nobody teaches you, like, what to do with that, you know? And that's
and
why.
How could they?
Yeah, and how, you know, like, you would have to have a mentor come in that's been through it to teach you, but, you know, we don't have that. So that was actually a big problem for me, too, was, yeah, I got fame and money way too early, I feel like. And, you know, everybody's a yes man.
Sure.
And shit, when you know what I mean? So everybody would just wants to do shit for you. And so I felt like I was on top of the world circa 2018 and 19 and stuff. And yeah, it starts to really affect like your mental health. I will say that, like, especially the pandemic has shown me that, like, ever since the pandemic started, can't do shows. There's less people around you and, you know, you're not outside. Low key, it starts getting depressing and stuff. You start feeling like you're not as good as you were. And it's just, it's crazy, man. And I'm starting to realize all the crazy shit that when I was around a bunch of people, like that gratification, you know, like it was like its own drug, I feel like.
Of what? And, just feeling like you're the man?
Yeah, bro, definitely just feeling like you're the man. Like, I'm not a cocky person, but it was just a good,
I mean, I think feeling. That's just human nature. Anybody, that feels good for anybody.
Yeah, definitely. But like I said, yeah, the pandemic hit, less people around, stuff. You start realizing what's important. I'm starting to realize, like, none of that shit's really, I mean, I knew that shit wasn't important, but yeah, it's just a weird time. Weird time, man.
Well, how do you kind of make the decision to look out for yourself? Because like you said, you know, there's so many people in the industry who are happy to just kind of let you self-destruct if it's profitable for them.
Ooh,
and,
yes.
You know, they'll just move on to the next person. And how do you kind of know when to snap out of that and be like, you know, I have to look out for myself?
Yeah, I feel like that's happening to me actually right now with the things I can't talk about and stuff. But yeah, right now I'm really just trying to focus on myself. My sobriety is the most important thing to me, I feel like. And I'm still making music. I'll go out, like, the little times I do go out, I did go out in public in 2020. People would, yeah, still come up to me and take pictures and stuff, but they'd always be like, yo, when are you dropping new music? That was, like, the most common thing. And I'm like, damn, like, if they're telling me that, they can see that I'm not dropping music.
You put out a decent amount of stuff.
Yeah, like, I think I put out, what am I, like, 2 songs last year?
Oh, okay. I thought it was more than that.
No, the most recent one, my girlfriend, though, that was like a couple months ago, I think. They're like 3 months. Yeah, I just slowed my roll with, like, I was gonna put out an album and stuff. When I wanted to do all that, let me also tell you, I was so fucked up off of drugs. So fucked up. It was like dictating what I did, like everything in my life. So I was just, it was like a crazy mess just of my life going on. So I really have just taken this time to slow down and focus on what I want my music to sound like first and foremost, because I've gotten older. You know, I'm 24. I'm not 18 anymore. I don't want to keep rapping about the same stupid shit that I was rapping about.
Sure.
We're going to come back. We're going to be back in a different way, in a different setting, one that's more appropriate.
What do you think that's going to sound like?
Definitely going to have elements of Zan. Definitely my voice is too,
sure.
I feel like too interesting for that not to, but maybe more like indie alternative, something like that, you know. Shout out to, you know, MGK, what he's doing is super sick, but maybe a little more indie.
Yeah,
you know, trying to do my own, because I know, like, what MGK does, but I love MGK's music, but a lot of people are trying to copy it and it feels very oversaturated, right. Like, but he's doing it beautifully, but it's just, we go into studio sessions all around LA and it's like the same,
right?
People just trying to emulate that alternative sound.
Yeah. So are you thinking more of like the kind of Kenny Hoopla grandson kind of direction of indie? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like that too. I love all types of like indie music or just music in general, but like Dayglow. Who else? Boy Pablo's dope. Just like, I love Cage Elephant. And I've been listening to like a lot of like older stuff too, like The Strokes and stuff. I don't know, I'm getting in my bag now. It's like, I love that whole vibe, bro. Like, there's so many artists that, cause I was so focused on just focusing on what hip hop was doing. And I feel like it clouded my brain. And I was like, like you gotta like open up more and stuff. So I've been listening to music I wouldn't normally listen to, but just, I'm having a great time doing that.
Somebody, I was reading some comments or whatever, and someone said that you were like stuck between two genres, meaning like alternative and hip hop. And I see what that person said, but I think that you are in a genre that didn't exist until a couple months ago. Or a couple years ago, that it's like the combination of those two things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you are accepted in hip hop to some extent, but you're not really a rap guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nah. What's funny about that is, I got big off making music, which was super cool. It's a blessing for anybody that's trying to make music. And then the media just picked me up on some other shit. And it was like every week there was some new crazy big TMZ story about me. I mean, for good reason. I was going through it for all that.
Sure. But it's interesting because you're hardly the only person going through the same shit. And they really did pick up on you disproportionately.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
It's not like you're the only person in LA doing drugs.
Yeah. Not at all. But it's just like the random stories that they would post, I feel like actually elevated my career and let people know who I was. So at a certain point, I made this joke. Like, I'm still an artist. I'm still going to make music forever. But I made a joke during that time period. Like, I don't even have to make music anymore, man. I'm just kind of like, good. I just got to keep doing dumb shit. Yeah, no, we're going to keep making music. But
that is true, is that I have to think that that's a terrible incentive for people, is that you're rewarded for doing self-destructive things. Like when you have a chill, healthy day, TMZ doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, they're not publishing that story. You're exactly right. They just want to see you self-destruct. You can literally go on YouTube and watch my whole life self-destruct.
Sure.
In like four videos, which is crazy. Like, but they love it, and it's terrible, but they love it. Yeah, we're in like a time and day and age where it's like, you know, that's it. That's like cool. I feel like it's almost cool to like be on some self-destructive shit. It's not cool. I don't think it's cool.
I don't think it is either. Well, what role did kind of alternative and rock have on you as far as influence? You know, a lot of people think of you as a rapper, but you are, but there's definitely more to it than that.
When it comes to like alternative and like rock, I grew up on like early, you know, big one was early Arctic Monkeys, like their old stuff. I liked when it was more punk kind of. Great band, Queens of the Stone Age, sick, classic, everything, The Killers and all that whole just the Strokes.
So you're a 2005 hipster.
Yes. Yes, I'm a 2005
American
hipster.
Apparel.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, go further back. I grew up, you know, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, all that grunge stuff. Yeah, bro, it's kind of hard because I listen to everything because my dad is why I make music, because he was so musically, like, inclined. And I wasn't even like that big on listening to records and stuff, but he had a record machine and we would just play everything on vinyl. So I learned like, and he had everything from like Beethoven to like De La Soul to NERD to like to everything, you know? So I was just very open to music in its own. The music's beautiful. I love it.
And listening to it like that, really, it forces you to slow down and listen to the details because you can't skip as easily.
Yeah, you definitely can't skip that easy on that thing. It was a real opener for me. You know, I realized I've always had such a big passion for music via my dad because of that. And I just never knew what to do with it. And then obviously it translated probably into a cool little music career. So shout out to dad.
So when did you like hook up with Michael and some of the other people that were there early on and kind of decide what direction you wanted to go with it? Or did you even decide, or did you just kind of fucking whatever happened? Or how did that happen?
That's a crazy story. I used to be a photographer and I was on SoundCloud. I wasn't on SoundCloud. I was just like a consumer of SoundCloud. And I found this artist called Steven Cannon. Still a good friend to this day. I felt like I was so cool because I was listening to something that nobody had heard before, but it was so good. And I showed all my friends, we started becoming Steven Cannon fans to the point where I finally found him like opening up for an artist at Los Globos in Los Angeles. And so we went and I stood in line with my friend for like 4 hours. Let me also tell you, nobody else was in line for 4 hours. Like, we thought we had to get there.
You could just show up when he's about to play.
Exactly.
I was going to say, I didn't realize people had to wait in line to see him back then, but I guess they didn't.
No, bro. That was me just being stupid. And he finally shows up. I get a picture with him, whatever. The show happens. It was cool. Backstage, I go and I'm like, yo, can I take pictures of you and you and your crew? You know, I'm just trying to anything at this point. They're like, yeah, okay. So I start taking pictures, go home, send them the pictures. And that connection, who was back there was Mikey, John, and everybody that I'm still with to this day, like, was in that little group right there. And so I just built that connection from right there. Probably annoyed the hell out of them for, I know I used to just show up to their house all the time, like, without knowing. And yeah, just built that connection. And like 4 or 5 years later, we're still going crazy. The same people. It's beautiful, man. Usually that doesn't happen.
There's so much to be said for not being afraid of being that annoying kid, you know, especially when you're that age. Like, I just did a podcast with the guys from a band called Fame on Fire that had a studio in Florida, and they knew poor Stacy when he was just the kid that would hang out at the studio. And so I was like, how did you end up doing a song with him? And that's how it happened. And, you know, same for me. That's how I know so many people.
It works.
You know, that I still talk to. You just can't be afraid of being that awkward, annoying little kid.
Yeah, you can't, because it's going to like work for you to some extent. Obviously not, but it just takes that one time, that one connection to be built. And also, shout out to poor Stacy, man. Mikey, you did a crazy record with poor Stacy. Yeah, Mikey did a crazy unreleased record with him. Shout out. He's going to blow up. Like, he's dope. Shout out poor Stacy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you weren't making music at all then? When you met them backstage, they were taking photos?
Yeah, I was strictly a photographer. That's crazy. And then I started doing like BTS of their shows, and I wasn't even that good. Like, I don't think they liked me at first, to be honest. Yeah, I don't think they liked me very much. They probably thought, because I was so weird, I would just show up to like, but yeah, you have to be that weird kid. I would just show up to their shows without them knowing. And they'd be like, oh, he's putting in a lot of effort. So they just, yeah, took me in at that point. But then my camera got stolen at one of their shows. And I was like, oh, I was devastated. Because, like, it had taken me so much to, like, save up for that camera and just to have it gone. But that night, we actually lost our close friend Gabe that same night due to an overdose. So I was like, I can't be mad about the camera. That's replaceable. Like, you know, life isn't. And after that day, I kept seeing my friends, like, Steven make music. Like, where I'd be hanging out. And I'm like, I should try it, you know, like, see what happens. And my first couple songs sucked really bad.
But that's part of the process, too.
Yeah, that's part of the process. You got to find, you know, your sound and your voice. Yeah, if you're amazing on the first try, you're gifted. And you,
good for you, but yeah, that's good not for you. The rest of us.
Yeah, that's not us. And yeah, they liked, but my producers liked my voice. They even if the song came out bad, they were like, you have a good voice, like a good raspiness to it. And so we just worked with it. They helped me work on it. And we eventually put out some, you know, decent music. And it just got, I like to think it got better. So, yeah.
I feel like you could do, like, voiceover for, like, Pixar movies or something.
Yeah.
If there's, like, some sleepy, like, cat character or something.
Yo, I've had this conversation with all my friends. I'm like, yo, I want to do voice acting. Like, I could be the sleepy cat.
There you go. So next week, like how Gilbert Gottfried got big for being like the parrot in Aladdin.
Oh my God. Yeah. We got to look for these jobs. Cause
yeah. I mean, you got the Hollywood connections. You can make it happen. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics... all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode. The photography thing is interesting because one of the things I was going to ask you about is like, I feel like you have really strong creative direction, you know, with your videos and the way you dress and just kind of everything. And I was wondering where that came from and how hands-on you are with that. And it sounds like you are also a very visual person then.
Yeah, definitely. My style is definitely because of probably little Mikey over here.
He's the brains behind the operation.
Yes, yes. This guy has been dapping me up in cool merch. And he, I mean, not just wearing the merch, he also shows me new music.
See Diego in a Vane shirt, we know who to blame.
Yeah, you blame Mikey right there. No, but he's not going to just let me be a poser and just wear it. He's like, you want to wear this? Like, you got to listen to some of their music first. So shout out to Mikey. And other than that, I would say I was more hands-on in the past with like my style, especially when I was like in the limelight more and shit. I feel so lazy. You catch me in like sweatpants and like a hoodie nowadays. Like, I don't know. I just feel like that's the type of vibe that the year is on right now. So.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be weird to be like, you know, 100% drip.
Drip,
you know,
all the time.
If you're just like, you know, at home playing Xbox.
Yeah, people do that though, which is funny.
I mean, that's a vibe too, you know.
That's definitely a vibe. It's a certain vibe right there. Not mine though.
What is your team now? Are you like totally independent or what? Tell me about that.
I'm totally independent at the moment, besides for like, you know, my friends like Kinfolk John and Morgoth. We have like offers on the table, but we're just figuring out where we want the brand to be, where we want to be first and foremost, and just seeing what we can achieve, seeing like what's the best route. So we're just taking it slow and figuring it out. We don't want to, because I had like a bad label experience the first time, so we really want to not deal with that again if possible.
Well, you know what they're going to want to do is they're going to want you to be on the radio again, making the biggest songs you possibly can and all that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not necessarily the right move for you.
Yeah, I don't think that is, because when they did do that, it felt cool at the time. Yeah, when you hopped in the car and they were playing, you know, a record on there, you felt like you're on top of the world. But the thing with labels, and I have nothing against labels. You know, it's a cool way to get your music out there and get popping and stuff. But for me, it just seems like a major label maybe wouldn't. I don't know if I want to go like do that again. You know, because I went on probably about 1,000 radio runs. You know, where you just like, oh my god, that was the most excruciating thing ever.
And they all ask you the same terrible questions.
Yes.
And you can tell they've never listened to more than 2 seconds of your music.
Yeah, like they've press played for like a second. It's always the same thing. I've had to say that like, yeah, 1,000 times.
I feel like your situation is almost like the best possible scenario, is you got the benefit of being on a major and kind of, you know, they can do things for you at the beginning of your career that are really hard to do for yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shout out to that.
You got that benefit, but now you can kind of take what they built and build your own thing on top of that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're trying to do. Shout out to the label, because what I will say that I take away from the label the most is what I learned, just watching them work and seeing how like the industry just, you know, works and stuff. So that was really cool to learn all that stuff. But now with that knowledge, it's like, oh yeah, let's start a record label. Like, that'd be fun, a little independent. But yeah, we just want to make some, we want to build on top of that.
So you have, I assume, like a manager still?
Yeah, I do have a manager still.
It's interesting to me that a lot of artists talk about their manager and label and stuff like that almost like they're the boss. And it's like, dude, they work for you. You know, like, oh, my manager won't let me. Your manager doesn't write the fucking check, you do.
Dude, so many problems right there too, that I don't know why, where that comes from. I think it's like such a weird relationship, the artist to manager. I've been lucky though. I have a really good relationship with my manager.
And I think a lot of it is probably them just being young and not really knowing that it doesn't have to be that way, or that they have the option to be in charge. And, you know, maybe they just don't feel comfortable.
It's almost like a dad son relationship.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
Yeah. It's almost like your manager could be like a father figure to you. And that's why it's like, oh, I want to do this. Like, you can't do that. It's the same shit. Like, same shit.
Yeah. And, you know, you went through that major label system and you kind of know what you want. And to me, that's the best possible place to be. You've seen, you know, you've seen the high, how it works at the highest levels. And now you can take that and you can choose to go that direction if you want to, but you can also choose to go another direction.
Yeah. It's completely up on the table. It's completely, if a good opportunity mainstream presented itself, I'm not going to turn that down, but I'm looking down in here in the underground to see what I can do. Cause I feel like there's a lot, I don't know. This is just a lot of, I'm not going to say more creativity, but something different.
Well, there's less people involved to put their stamp on it and slow things down and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like, you know, I came from where I'm at. Like, I came from the underground. It's a community, it's a family, especially like the SoundCloud era people, you know. So I'm just seeing what we could do. We could do great things again, man. We did it once, we can do it again.
Well, I mean, it's not like you fell off or something. Your stuff is still getting millions and millions of plays. You know, you're still better than a lot of people ever will be.
That's the Virgo in me, the perfectionist.
Oh, see, I'm a Virgo too, and I am the same way. Like,
yeah,
I'm only as good as the last thing I did.
Yeah. See, I love that, man. Love that.
So how much do you think you've grown into being kind of the CEO of yourself, if that makes sense?
That has honestly just recently kind of been a thing, if that makes sense. Like in the last like couple months, getting sober and getting control of my brain, my mind was the most important thing. I just want to do this myself. I want to I don't know how to describe it. It's a crazy way to describe it. Like, I don't know. I just feel like I could do more as a human being sober now. So I just want to continue on that and be a boss. Yeah, just be a boss one day.
It seems like a lot of people probably thought that you were going to be, you know, I don't know, I'll say Bobby Shmurda or something like that. Like someone that had a couple, you know, kind of meme songs and then disappeared, and it seems like you're really doing the opposite of that, of like, maybe you know maybe you'll be, you know, on the radio again, maybe you won't, but either way, you've found like this core group of fans that really love and support you.
Yeah,
that will probably stay with you. Like, you could be making music until you're 60 if you want to.
Yeah, and there'll still be that little niche.
And I would rather have that personally. I'd rather have like,
oh yeah,
a core group of a couple thousand people that will support you forever than a huge song on the radio.
That sounds nice. That sounds like retirement. I like that.
Yeah. You know, I don't mean to make it sound like, oh, well, you're not popular anymore, but that's okay. Like, I don't mean that. I mean, it's like you've found a group of people that like really have a deep connection with you.
Yeah, like we got big in America first, but shout out to like all the Latin countries.
I noticed all your comments. Yeah. There's a lot of Hispanic people in the comments.
Yeah. It's the craziest thing. I think it's because when I first said my name was Diego, like I don't look Hispanic, which is hilarious, but I'm full Hispanic. So when I said that, it's almost like they're like, yep, he's one of us, like bringing him back down here.
Right. Well, I do find it interesting that there's that whole like, oh, he's just a rich white kid thing.
I wish I was just a rich white kid. I probably wouldn't have made music. If I was a rich white kid. nah, definitely not. I grew up pretty poor. Yeah, but shout out to all the Latin countries, Mexico, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Spain. Bro, yeah, I don't know what it was, but I love that they love the music and they love who I am and I love them for supporting me. And yeah, I need to do shows. I should go do like some shows out there.
We have a couple songs that it looks, I don't know much about like the like Latin scene, but that are a little bit more like kind of like reggaeton kind of inspired, and it sounds like you did some features with some of those people.
Yeah, because when I started to realize that I had a big fan base down south, a lot of the big artists down there started hitting me up, crazy big artists that I didn't even know about until then, but they do like 100 million like plays on like a video in like a month. I'm like, holy shit,
that scene is fucking huge. I don't know that much about it other than like I remember seeing Despacito before it was popular in America, and it still had like a billion plays.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. It's like a whole another world, you know, because like the dude will get like 150 million plays in like a month,
right?
But you're like, you never heard of him.
right
but obviously he's like the
huge.
Shit. Yeah, and I found that so interesting. And so I started to get hit up by people like that, and people would hit me up, and then we just, you know, started working. Yeah, they're great people, man. They're great people. I love them. It's different than working with, like, American artists. Sometimes working with American artists, it seems, like, kind of put together too much and, like, not organic. It's like, oh, you get this. If I do a collab with him, I get this much clout. Right. You get that much clout.
The spreadsheet.
The clout sheet. But over down south, it's more just like, yo, you want to make some good music? Let's make some good music, see what happens.
Have you played many shows down there, or you haven't had a chance yet?
I had a tour before the pandemic to go down there. I think Mexico City, further down, just the areas, South America and stuff. But it all got canceled. The ticket sales were amazing, but what happened was the promoters fell through. So it just like,
right.
I was so excited. Like to go down there, because knowing the big fan base I have out there, I was just like, yo, this is gonna be crazy. Like,
I'm sure it'll still be there when you're able to make it happen again.
Yeah, I hope shows and everything come back, man. Like, people are struggling out here.
Yeah, well, you know, your genre is one where it's a lot more feasible to make a living without playing shows than it is like in rock, where like streams are just never gonna be, well, I shouldn't say never, but it's unlikely that streams are gonna be as big as they are for like your genre.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think that they will be either, like.
So you started your Patreon in October, I think it was. Tell me about that.
Me and Kinfolk started a Patreon in October. We've put out like a little bit of content, because it's kind of like, I consider it like, it's in like a weird state. We want to do something crazy with the Patreon. So, but we're just setting up a lot of things on the outside to make sure that the content is crazy. So we've been a little slow on it, but we have some content on there that we keep putting up. But we want to turn it into a whole like podcast, kind of like just something that just something good. I want to feel good about what I give. If people are paying, I want to feel good about like what content they get. So I would say like, if you want some new content, yeah, we're uploading exclusive content on Patreon right now, but I would say wait a couple months to do the Patreon.
My personal opinion is that people, I think that creators see it that way, like that they really have to like over deliver, but I don't think audiences see it that way. I think they just want you to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like from my Patreon, which isn't huge, but you know, it's decent. Only about 10% of the people actually consume the stuff that I put out on Patreon.
Yeah.
And they don't cancel or anything. I think they just want to support me. And, you know, I support a few other people. I don't ever really look at the stuff they give me.
Well, yeah, what you've built is amazing though. You built, like, you have a big podcast. You have the YouTube like show, like, bro, we stay watching that over here. So I'm about to sign up to your Patreon right now, dog.
There you go. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I think it's awesome to challenge yourself to deliver a lot, but at the same time, people, I think, are just happy to support.
Yeah, yeah. And shout out to them for real, because they contribute, support, and I like that. I want to have like a good community on Patreon one day where it's just like that.
Yeah. I think Patreon's amazing. Like, and whether it's that or OnlyFans or whatever, like, the future to me is clearly like directly connecting with your fans, like just cutting out the labels and the promoters and everybody, just cut out all the bullshit and just connect directly with your fans. And, you know, you only need a couple thousand people to be able to support yourself on Patreon as compared to like needing a billion streams.
Yeah. You get a couple thousand people on the Patreon. Oh man.
And you're good.
You're living. Yeah. You're good. That's crazy.
There's a couple specific things I wanted to ask you about in a couple songs and videos. One was with Girls, Girls, Girls. You said there's a line in there. It's like, all my life I've been an image.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
All my life I've been an image. That's definitely me just lashing out that I feel like the world has this perception of me that probably isn't, definitely not accurate. They just think I'm stupid, on drugs or something. And the media paints they paint an image that usually is not nice. So it's just kind of like, it's just toying with that idea. Like, I don't know, because I'm so used to it at this point. So I might as well just throw in the music. Like,
sure.
Let people know.
But at the same time, you know, you are an entertainer.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know what you mean. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, like a puppet. Definitely during like 2018, I definitely felt like a puppet to the people above me.
But how much of what you put out, and I think about this for myself, obviously you're a 5 billion times more well-known than I am, but, you know, I think about this too, is like, you know, you kind of have to put out an image to the public because they expect a certain thing from you. And like, how much of what you do is being a character? Not that it's fake, but do you know what I mean?
Well, a lot of the ratchet shit on my Instagram is definitely a result of when I was like fucked up off like Xanax and stuff. Yeah. When I started doing Xanax, I do the most wildest shit that I get sober every time. I'm like, why did y'all let me do that? Like, looking back, but I leave it up because it goes up, like it does millions of views, and I'm like, they liked it, somebody liked that. But yeah, being like sober now, it's just more like, I don't know, I just want to be normal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's definitely a weird time. It's just a weird time, man.
You see some people in the comments are like, oh, I miss the old Xan.
Ah.
And that's got to be interesting to see, since people fucking hated that.
Yeah, right? Like, the old Xan. What's the old Xan? You miss me off four Xanaxes and fucking scootering through the crib, breaking shit.
Right.
Like, I know my homies don't miss the old Xan.
I'm sure you don't either.
Nah, yeah, I don't miss that. I was younger, which, you know, was definitely a big part of it too. Younger, the drugs, money, fame, like all four of those things, probably the worst combination. But yeah, just, you know, we've evolved over. All my friends have evolved. Like, my friends are older than me, obviously. And I think that's what helped me out, is them. Like, I feel like I'm 30, but I'm not.
How do you sort of get the sense of who is really there for you and supporting you, and who is either a clout chaser or just, you know, viewing it as a transactional thing?
Yeah, like some yes man people.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm such a nice person. So in the beginning, like, I would take a bunch of people on tour, Like, obviously, we take, you know, the main homies on tour. They're good. We just let other people, like, pile up on the tour bus. And they were just trying to obviously soak up, like, what we were doing, you know what I mean? Like, shows and travel and stuff. Yeah. And I didn't realize it because, of course, they're coming up to me like, oh, man, you're so great, Dan.
Oh, we're friends, like, right?
We're friends, yeah. Like, me, you, yeah, you're dope. And so I was just like, oh, everybody loves me.
Yeah.
Everybody loves me. But, yeah, no. Nah. And then my friends, even to this day, still do it. Not as much, obviously, because we've kicked about a lot of the fake out. But they still come up to me and be like, yo, this guy is just a clown, bro. Like, stop fucking with him. And I'm like, what? I'm like, he's a clown? And then he tells me why. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Like, yeah. It just goes straight over my head. Like, but yeah, we got rid of that probably like a year and a half ago. We got rid of like all the negativity, all the fake people, but they still try to come around, and it's just, we're smarter than that at this point. Like, I know how to recognize it now. So,
and you know, I think a lot of people, it's not like they're bad people that are trying to use you or something. It's just that they think it's cool that they're around somebody who's, you know, famous and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They definitely get a thrill out of just being up in that scene. And yeah. And, you know, it's cool too, because some of them have made careers off of like just being up in my scene, and then someone else's scene intergliding with that. Like, and now they're doing big things with that artist.
Sure.
So shout out to them. Like,
that's what I'm trying to do.
It's almost like, Yeah. It's almost like that annoying kid that you got to keep, like, you know, you got to keep poking the bear, man. You got to keep, because something like that might happen.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the video for Wide Awake, which, for anybody who hasn't seen it, is
God.
Up on the roof of some, you know, fancy penthouse with about a dozen girls, a dozen video vixens shaking
vixens
their butts.
For sure.
It's you seem so out of place there. What is that all about?
Oh my god. Yo, shout out to that song.
It's a very good song, by the way.
Yeah, our homie who had done the beat passed away. Rest in peace.
Oh, was that Diego?
Yeah, oh, Diego, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Diego
did that. R.I.P.,
yeah, Diego did that. And Mikey.
Yeah,
Mikey and Diego did the beat. And what happened was, I was staying in that penthouse actually for like the previous month with Tyler Yahweh, another dope ass artist.
Yeah.
And one day I think I was like, well, we got to utilize this place. It's still a crazy video. What would happen? Insane. Like, we had no idea. Like, they brought the girls up and it was just like, all right, we're going to have a video. It turned into a full fledged like party, like 2 hours later. And I think we probably spent like an hour directing the video, just running around the penthouse, and then it just like cut party. Jake Paul showed up. It's like, and it's crazy. Like, that shit just didn't happen.
So this was pre-sobriety?
Yeah, I was fucked up. Okay. Oh man, I was definitely. They had to, I think, drag me out at the end of the night of the penthouse, the security, back down to my other room, and this probably didn't look that good. But
right,
it's a good night. Yeah, it was a good night. Everybody had fun.
It's just so odd to me to see somebody like you, you know, in, you know, your kind of stereotypical rap video like that.
I know what you're talking about. It's definitely, it can be seen as, a little out of place and stuff. Yeah, blame the director.
No, I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just kind of strange, you know, just because I see you as more of like an alternative kid.
Yeah, yeah. That video was very like more, in your face, like that. But, yeah, great director, but
very cool edit.
I know, cool edit. I know what you're talking about, though. I know exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been more dark.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, it is what it is. Cool. Yeah. Well, I won't take up too much more of your time, but one last thing for, I guess, anybody listening to this who, you know, has considered trying to get sober and is maybe afraid of facing the world without the ability to self-medicate, what would you tell that person?
Depending on where you're at with your drug use, like, if you're, you know, far gone, you definitely need to seek help, because I've had seizures trying to just go cold turkey off of you can die from it. I've had 8 seizures now from trying to go cold turkey off specifically Xanax, and it's like the scariest thing ever. So if you're really far down bad, yeah, you have to get help, but I mean, for the best, like, get help, get on some detox stuff, there's always someone there to help. But if you're just starting it, bro, stop that right now. Because let me tell you, that like almost ruined my life. Almost killed me. I tell my friends this, and it's another morbid joke, but it's like I'm so grateful to be alive because we've lost friends that did 90 times less the amount of drugs that we did and died and overdosed. So it's like, it's a blessing that, you know, nothing bad happened to me. But yeah, it's not worth it. I know it's like probably the most cringy cliche thing to say, but like drugs aren't cool, you know. There was a time I thought that shit was cool, but 2021, if you're still like doing all that shit, you gotta stop, man. Just stop. Get help. There's always someone to talk to. I know people feel alone, and people's mental health, I know, are going through it right now with the pandemic, but you just gotta stay strong. Even my mental health is kind of going a little cuckoo with the pandemic, but you just gotta stay strong and just try to focus on yourself. Do something that betters you as a person. Yeah, there's just, I wish I could like speak to like a whole like classroom of kids right now.
Right on. Well, I'm sure you're helping people. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, good luck with the rest of the year.
Yo, thank you, brother.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.